is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today, I ask members to rise for a moment of silent prayer and reflection in memory of the victims in Waco, Texas. Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We move first to the second order of business, executive and official communication. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Coonan, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Wieger, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the second order of business, executive and official communications. Please make note of those. The third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file, herewith returned. Senate file number 1168, a bill for an act relating to public safety, creating new crimes relating to 911 emergency calls. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. Want me to just go ahead with this one? Okay, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 671, a bill for an act relating to public safety, providing that funds received for out-of-state offenders incarcerated in Minnesota are appropriated to the Department of Corrections. Senate file number 671 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Bach, on behalf of Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 671, that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 819, 1160, and 1195. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The House bills will be referred as indicated, and House file 819 and 1195 will be given their first reading. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move to lay House File 1160 on the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. House File 1160 will be given its first reading. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Eighth order of business, introduction, first reading of Senate bills. The bills will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. This is an author's motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that House File 976 be taken from the table and given its second reading.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. House File 976 will be given its second reading. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that House File 976 be laid on the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I'd like to move for a recess of about an hour, and the Majority Caucus will caucus in room 112.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you. The Republicans will caucus in room 107.
All those in favor of the motion to recess, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate is in recess. The Senate will come to order. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I impose a call of the Senate.
The Senate is under call.
Madam President, I move for the proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Sergeant-at-Arms will bring in the absent members. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list has been distributed. It's on your desk.
The first bill on special orders is General Orders Number 158, House File 729, Senator Tomassoni.
Madam President, House File 729.
Excuse me, would people standing in the aisle between Senator Tomassoni and myself please move? The rule is you can't stand between the Speaker and the President. Thank you. Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 729 should take about 4.5 more hours. No, just kidding, everybody. This is a vehicle. It's got some study language in it, and it's only being offered today because we need to have a way to divide up the bill we passed yesterday in order to get it to conference committee.
Is there any discussion on House File 729? Seeing none, the second secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 729, a bill for an act relating to state government, appropriating money for jobs and economic development, commerce and consumer protection, and housing.
The secretary will take the roll. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 42 in favor, 19 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 25 on general orders, Senate File 683, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 683 exempts CPAs from having to obtain a private detective license. Currently, attorneys do not have to do so when they are engaged in forensic activities. And the bill is suggesting that CPAs not have to do that as well. They are currently or frequently engaged in investigations regarding fraud, but they do, their scope of practice does not really include any of the typical activities that we think of private detectives engaging in, and the trend across this country is to exempt them from the private detective licensure requirements.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, the secretary will give Senate File 683 its third reading.
Senate File Number 683, a bill for an act relating to private detectives, exempting certified public accounting services from licensure requirements.
The secretary will take the roll. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 in favor, 1 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 146 on general orders, Senate File 1307, Senator Herr.
Madam President, this bill, Senate File 1307, is a business-friendly bill, an agency bill from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights seeking to make small changes in the provision of the department to reduce the time frames for the issuance of certificate of compliance from 30 days to 15 days. The department currently already processed nearly 75% of all certificates within 15 days and anticipate implementing best practices to achieve issuing all certificates within the specified time frame. This compliance is pertaining to the Affirmative Action Plan. Under Minnesota Human Rights Act, organizations that have more than 40 full-time employees in Minnesota on a single working day during the previous 12 months must have a certificate of compliance issued by the Commissioner of the Department of Human Rights before a state contract can be executed. Again, the scope of this bill is only to make minor changes from 30 days to 15 days for operational efficiency, which will expedite governmental service to the public, to the business, and the contractor. So, Senators and Madam President, I ask for your support.
Is there any discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Herr take a question?
Senator Herr, will you yield? Senator Herr will yield. Senator Hall.
Thank you. Senator Herr, could you tell me how fast the department at this point is able to respond to the certificates. They have up to 30 days. Are they able to respond within 15 days now?
Senator Herr.
Senator Hall, Madam President, currently they are reprocessed nearly 75% of all the certificates within 15 days. So, they will be able to.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Herr. So the idea is to get them to do the last 25% within 15 days. Is that then correct, Senator Herr?
Senator Herr.
That is correct.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. What do you offer you?
Senator Herr will yield. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Herr, how many full-time employees actually perform this particular function for our state?
Senator Herr.
I'm not the commissioner of the department, so I won't know all the exact number. But I'm sure it's available for the public, and if you check on the website.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Senator Herr. The reason I ask this question is because when you budget your labor allocation, you do it based on the amount of time needed. And right now they're complying 75% of the time, which sounds good. But if you reduce that timeline to 15 days, if you don't have enough FTEs, you may already have either a compliance issue or you may have to start hiring FTEs in order to comply with the 15-day requirement. So I have serious reservations about this because without knowing the number of FTEs, if let's say hypothetically the number of FTEs was 10 and they were able to complete it, but if two of them go on vacation, one of them has a sick child, you suddenly don't have the same labor requirement, but you do have the requirement to perform this function within 15 days, which just because of simple happenstance of how the labor market works, you may not have the labor to perform this, and now we will have our government out of compliance where if you would normally just leave it at 30 days, they'd be able to perform this function. So if Senator Herr does have that number, I'd certainly like to hear it.
Senator Herr.
Senator Osmack and Madam President, I recall the commissioners testified in the Judiciary Committee that the department doesn't need additional FTE to be able to reach the goal of 15 days.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Hodge yield to a question?
Senator Herr will yield. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. I would like to ask the question about the repealer, in particular, subpart 3, insufficient information. I consider this a very valuable rule. It says, a business or firm whose submission does not meet the requirements of subpart 1 shall be notified within 15 days that its submission must be revised. The notifications shall state specifically how the submission fails to meet the requirements of subpart 1. Certificates of compliance shall be issued 15 days after the department has received a revised submission which complies with subpart 1. With the repeal of subpart 3, how would that affect the situations that are stated here, perchance their submission does not meet the requirements on their initial application?
Senator Herr.
Senator Kiffmeyer, Madam Chair, mainly if the applicant doesn't meet the requirement, then they will receive a notice within the 15 days period.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Then I would like to make an oral amendment on line 2.24, delete after the number 2, delete and 3, comma.
You want that repeated? Okay. The Secretary will report the oral amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves to amend Senate File 1307 as follows. Page 2, line 24, delete subparts 2 and 3R and insert subpart 2 is.
Are there any questions on that? Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Kiffmeyer yield?
Senator Kiffmeyer will yield. Senator Latz.
Senator Kiffmeyer, I mean, this language, I assume, was originally presented by the Department of Human Rights, and I would assume they know best what language is duplicative and still necessary given the statutory changes they propose. Can you inform the body whether subpart 3 may be duplicative of the language that is now being put into the statute with regard to deficiency notices and the time frames?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Madam President and Senator Latz, that's why I started out by asking the question about its effect, and I felt that the answer left me in doubt, and so to be fair to folks who are trying to comply, that is why I thought it would be best to eliminate the repeal of Subdivision 3 until we know the answer to that question.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I think that the better practice, rather than repealing a provision in the bill, because there's some doubt about whether or not that repealer needs to be done, is that we should get a more certain answer to the question, because repealing it might actually have a negative impact on the way the law is proposed to work. And generally, when these things are drafted, they're drafted by the department or they are drafted through Senate counsel or the revisor's office, and they do a pretty good job of cross-referencing these things and determining, you know, what's duplicative, what's in conflict, and so on when they're deciding what repealers need to be implemented. I'm going to look up what you've got right now as a proposal, and if you really want to move forward with your proposed amendment at this time, I'd ask perhaps we could lay the bill over for a couple of other bills to be heard, and I can look this up, and maybe we can get a little more definitive answer to your question rather than proceeding with a deletion of a repealer in the bill.
Let's hear from Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I think my point is along the same lines as Senator Latz. If you look at lines 2.9 to 2.22, you see that notice is required. That's picked up in the statute. Now, it's not to the same level of detail as in subpart 3, where there's a requirement that the notification shall state specifically how the submission fails to meet the requirements of subpart 1. I understand Senator Kiffmeyer's point but a business failing to receive notice, but I think that's picked up in the statute. But maybe the better solution would be simply to pick up that sentence out of subpart 3, that second sentence that says the notification shall state specifically how the submission fails to meet the requirements of subpart 1. That would be my suggestion, Madam President.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would be very glad to take some time here to do exactly that. I think those are excellent suggestions to address the concern, if that's okay with the author.
Senator, would you like to lay over your bill temporarily? On the table.
Madam President, yes.
Senate File 1307 is laid on the table. It's a motion. All those in favor say the motion is to lay Senate File 1307 on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The next bill on special orders is number 151 on general orders, Senate File 324, Senator Johnson. Senator Johnson.
Madam Speaker and Madam President and members, Senate File 324 is a bill that was requested by the state auditor, and what it does is something I think we all want to support, is that in addition to auditing many other things, that she wants to be sure that local public pension plans, when there is when there is some sort of fraud or misuse of funds going place at taking place, that they are required to report that information to the Office of the State Auditor. Currently, most of them do report to her, but she would like it clarified that public pension plans are required to report evidence or of theft or misuse of public funds. This bill went through the state and local government committees and the Judiciary Committee, and there has been no opposition to the bill. Thank you very much.
Is there any discussion on Senate File 324? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 324 its third reading.
Senate File Number 324, a bill for an act relating to the state auditor, requiring employees and officers of local public pension plans to report unlawful actions.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 in favor and 0 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 59 on general orders, Senate File 834. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 854 makes some small
changes. Senate File 834, Senator Latz.
834, I misspoke. Makes some minor changes in the guardian ad litem statute. These proposed changes were brought to us by the Guardian Ad Litem Board of the State of Minnesota. Other than a few technical changes, I'll just highlight the substantive changes here. One change that applies in child protection cases as well as in delinquency cases is where a CHIPS petition is filed by an employee of the guardian ad litem system, the coordinator or manager. Under present law, then a guardian ad litem cannot be appointed out of that same group of organization within the management segment there. And so this provision deletes that prohibition so that when the CHIPS petition is filed by an employee or an agent, they can still appoint the guardian ad litem from that group. Secondly, there's a change with regard to the statute relating to the costs of paying for the guardian ad litem. The statute provides that the state board shall pay if the party's not capable of paying for them, but longstanding practice has been different than that. The So sometimes there are volunteers and sometimes there are employees. It used to be there was a lot of fee-for-service or independent contractors guardian ad litem. That is no longer the case. So the statutory change will align the statute with the longstanding practice regarding those costs. Finally, the other substantive change is that the chair of the guardian ad litem board would no longer be appointed by the Supreme Court. The guardian ad litem board used to be part of the court system. A couple of years ago, we made a statutory change that removed them from the court system, but still left this provision in for the court to appoint the chair. The board would prefer to be able to select their own chair from among their members, the same practice as occurs with the Board of Public Defense. So I might ask you to support the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is there any discussion? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would the author yield?
Will Senator Latz yield? He will yield. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, in striking the language on page 5 regarding the fees, does that mean that the fees now are coming from where?
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Anderson, well, there won't be any change in where the fees come from. With this change, the costs, as I understand it, are paid by the guardian ad litem system, either through the courts or through the guardian ad litem board itself. But it used to be there was a fee basis. The old system was that the guardian ad litem board or the court would contract with a guardian ad litem who was their own business person, essentially, and they were hired on an individual basis, and that was the practice around the state. But the whole system has moved away from that model, and now the guardian ad litems are all employees of the board, the guardian ad litem board. So those employees are paid their salary and their costs, just like any other employees. There are still some volunteer guardian ad litems as well, which your question does not apply to. But the language in the statute that's being deleted relating to the fee basis is really, in current terms of current practice, it's obsolete.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Latz yield again?
Senator Latz will yield. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, and the volunteers then that you're talking about are then paid out of the guardian ad litem board or out of the fund that's set up for them also?
Senator Latz.
Madam President, the volunteers aren't paid. They're volunteers. If they have costs that are supposed to be covered by the system, then the guardian ad litem board will—I expect that those are submitted to the board for coverage.
Any other questions, Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to introduce the A1 amendment.
The secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File number 834 as follows, page 4, line 26, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz and members, this amendment focuses on page 4. That's regarding the structure and the membership of the guardian ad litem board. As you can tell, currently there's 7 members on the board. They come from a variety of disciplines. One would be a former guardian ad litem. 2 would be attorneys. 1 would be a public member. They would be appointed by the Supreme Court. And 4 members would be appointed by the governor. The one thing that I believe is missing on this board would be a current guardian ad litem on this board panel. I think a current guardian would be able to bring in real context in real time the experiences, the challenges, of, and perhaps the difficulties of what guardian ad litems are experiencing in the field at that very moment. This amendment simply defines the membership appointed by the governor. He has four, and that at least one be a current guardian ad litem. And I'll stand for any questions, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I respectfully would ask the members to not adopt this amendment. This proposal was considered at the Judiciary Committee, and the committee, after giving it thoughtful consideration, decided not to adopt this proposal and to leave flexibility in the hands of the governor. There are other provisions in the statute here that require that all of the candidates for appointment must have an interest in must demonstrate an interest in maintaining a high-quality independent guardian ad litem program for the advocacy of the best interests of children as required in juvenile and family court, shall be well acquainted with the guardian ad litem program as well as the laws that affect the guardian ad litem's work, including the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act, the Federal Multi-Ethnic Placement Act, the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act, and there's geographic distribution that's required as well. I would also raise the question whether or not a current guardian ad litem might possibly have something of a conflict of interest if they are involved in making board-level decisions relating to compensation and budget and so on that would affect their own compensation. So I'd ask the members not to adopt this amendment.
More discussion. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, you and I chatted very briefly just immediately before this exchange, and I spoke with one of our staff members who is at the Judiciary Committee hearing. We did not, although we discussed it, we did not take a formal action as a form of an amendment on it. We discussed in the committee of whether we should go in that direction, and there were, I could determine that there was at least a little resistance to the idea without having more information. The needless to say, I'm not sure if the acts that you made reference would restrict a guardian ad litem board from having a current member that happens to be a currently licensed guardian on the board. I don't believe that's true, but this has been an issue that I know that I have been raising for 3 years, and it doesn't seem to get a lot of interest, but I do believe that there are professional boards in this state that we have current licensed professionals on advisory boards in the state of Minnesota. If that's the case, and if your argument is correct, then we should dismiss all of those members that give current live action advisory topics to an advisory board, and we must dismiss them because of their potential conflict of interest. This is an advisory board that's giving direction on how to operate the guardian ad litem system. I just believe that any board should have a current member that's licensed. I think it brings a tremendous amount of resource to any board. We'll just see how the body feels on the amendment. Thank you, Senator Latz.
Any more discussion on the A1 amendment? Senator Latz.
Madam President, I would agree with Senator Limmer's thoughtful analysis. I wouldn't want to paint the brush too broad here with regard to current membership or anything like that, or people currently active as guardians in that regard. But I think if there's some uncertainty about this, and if there was some resistance on the part of the Judiciary Committee to considering it at the time, perhaps we need some more information. But the other point that I made was that I think there are already adequate protections in the statute, guidance in the statute for the knowledge and experience that the candidates for appointment to the board must possess. The fact that they may not be currently active as a guardian ad litem is, I think, not very important given the other criteria that are in the statute and that, frankly, a guardian ad litem presently active would possess as well. So I guess my point is there'll be plenty of expertise on the board with or without this particular amendment, so I'd ask the members not to adopt the amendment.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President.
Madam President, I asked for a division. I thought I was up before Senator Newman, but.
Okay, a division has been requested. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please stand. Thank you. All those opposed, please stand. You may sit. The chair stands corrected. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Any more discussion? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. That worked out pretty well. We got most of the members back on the floor. Madam President, I just wanted to rise in support of Senator Latz's bill. I've gone through the bill. I visited with him very briefly. I think that the changes to the guardian ad litem system as outlined in this bill are appropriate. I will be supporting the bill, and I would urge members to do so also. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any more discussion? The Secretary will give Senate File 834 its third reading.
Senate File Number 834, a bill for an act relating to judiciary, modifying certain provisions relating to the State Guardian Ad Litem Board.
The Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 61 in favor, 0 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is adopted and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 94 on general orders, Senate File 523, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. Before us this morning is Senate File 523. It is affectionately known as Ban the Box. Before I proceed through the bill, you would notice, members, a number of letters that are on your desk from various organizations supporting this bill. One from Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. You also see a list of members who are part of the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition. There's also a resolution from the city of St. Paul supporting Senate File 523, as well as the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce. Senate File 523 is very important because as we have increased the number of crimes and criminal penalties in our state over the last several decades, the number of Minnesotans throughout the state that have some type of a criminal record has now reached an estimated 1 million people, or 1 in 5. Minnesota has the 8th highest percentage in the nation of its citizens incarcerated or currently on some type of supervision. With new and much easier access to the records and increased use of them by employers, many Minnesotans are turned away from employment for which they are qualified, even if their record is unrelated, from long ago, or even inaccurate, often just based on the answer to the sometimes confusing question about criminal records on the initial employment application. Removing the question about criminal records from employment applications and requiring that it not be asked until an applicant or until applicants are selected for an interview allows Minnesotans to be evaluated based initially upon all of their skills and qualifications and not just their past. The cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and Ramsey and Hennepin County removed criminal records questions from their applications over 6 years ago. Minneapolis waits until an offer of employment has been made. In 2009, members and Madam President, Governor Pawlenty signed legislation to make Minnesota one of the first states to require all public employers to wait until applicants are chosen for an interview to ask questions about their criminal background. Many states have followed our lead, and many jurisdictions have or are considering extending this practice to private employers. Elected officials in Minneapolis and St. Paul are in the process of considering applying this practice to vendors and contractors. Senate File 523 will require all employers in Minnesota, with some appropriate exceptions, to wait until selecting applicants for an interview before asking about criminal records. Employers will still be able to conduct background checks as soon as they select the applicant that will be interviewed. Passage of this legislation will continue Minnesota's record of leadership on these issues and provide for a uniform statewide policy. Employers will also benefit by opening the initial step of their hiring process to a larger, potentially more qualified and diverse pool of applicants and determining if their past is relevant to their current qualification as an employee. They would be less likely to miss applicants who have the skills, qualifications, and character needed for the job. Workers will also benefit by being evaluated on their skills and qualifications for the job and not just their past. Those who have offended will then have greater opportunity to become responsible and tax-paying community members. Minnesota will benefit by developing a workforce that is employed to its full potential, both now and into the future when the demand for trained and skilled employers will increase. If you look at the bill, members and Madam President, Section 1 just talks about, and we did strike some language in Section 1 in order to make sure that employers are able to look at background records, and we wanted to make sure, and I will have an amendment shortly that would make sure that language is conforming. limits on admissibility for those individuals who are concerned that if an employer does not adhere to this law, that perhaps there's an individual cause of action that an individual will be able to bring forth, and they cannot do that. And in fact, if you look at 2.2, starting at 2.1, it says that no one is able to bring any information into a criminal court or any court for that matter that seems to talk about the employer's compliance with this section. Section 3 of the bill just again reconfirms that a private employer, as happens now with public employers, are not able to ask or inquire into the person's background until there is an interview, or if there's no interview, before a conditional offer of employment is made to the applicant. And that was as a result of some testimony that we heard in the committee, whereas some temporary agencies use a different process, and we wanted to be helpful to that particular group of people. Remedies, your members. If you look at Section 4, and just so folks are clear about Section 4 was initially, when I first started this bill, to provide an individual cause of action for an individual if an employer did not adhere to this. After talking to the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Target, and others, we had an opportunity to come together and say there will be no individual cause of action, only penalties that an employer would see if they did not adhere to this. They would have to go through the Department of Human Rights. And to just talk quickly about that, the first year, because this would be enacted for 2014, so that first year, if you look at Section 4, subdivision 2, for violations that occur before January 1st, 2015, the penalties are as follows. For the first violation, the commissioner shall issue a warning to the employer that includes a notice regarding the penalties for subsequent violations. We wanted to make sure that first year companies were able to be warned and have time to make the necessary transition. If a first violation is not remedied within that first year, within 30 days of the issuance of a warning, the commissioner may, which is discretionary, impose a fine up to $500. Now, that means that the Department of Human Rights doesn't have to even put forth a penalty for an individual. They will look at the surrounding circumstances and make that determination. And then for subsequent notions, if after January 15th, January 1st of 2015, they're subject to a fine up to $500 per violation, not to exceed $500 in a calendar month. And for violations that occur after December 31st, 2014, the penalties for employers that employ no more than 20 persons at a site, the penalty is up to $500 for each violation, and that will not exceed and cannot exceed $500 in a calendar month. And then finally, for employers that employ more than 20 persons at one or more sites in the state, the penalty is up to, again, discretionary, $500 for each violation, not to exceed $2,000 in a calendar month. And I will have an amendment that will make some adjustments to that particular area in the bill. And finally, there are exceptions, as you see in Section 5. That just says, for an example, that this chapter does not supersede a requirement under law to conduct a criminal history background investigation or consider criminal history records in hiring for particular types of employment. And in fact, that could happen even on an application where a person can say, this particular employer cannot hire anyone with a certain background. So with that being said, Madam President, I would like to offer the I'd like to offer the A1 amendment. A5 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Champion moves to amend Senate File number 523 as follows, page 1, line 13. And this is the A5 amendment.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. And Madam President, I would like to also make one oral amendment to the amendment.
Please state the amendment, oral amendment to the amendment.
It would be on line 1.8. I would like to change $250 to $100 in both places on line 1.8.
The Secretary will report the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Champion moves to amend the A5 amendment, page 1, line 8, delete $250 and insert $100, and delete the second $250 and insert $100.
To that amendment, Senator Champion.
Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, Madam President, line 1.8 simply is to decrease the amount of a violation, especially for employers that employ 10 or fewer persons at a site. The penalty is up to, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's prescriptive, but it's up to, $100. And that is to make the necessary change in Section 4. And the other part of the
amendment. Why don't we vote on the amendment to the amendment? All those in favor of the oral amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Champion.
Also on that amendment, the amendment as amended.
The A5 amendment as amended.
Yes, the A5 amendment as amended. If you look at line 1.2 to 1.4, that is simply just to make sure there's some clarifying and conforming language for the for Section 1 of my bill, and it just says simply nothing in this section precludes an employer from requesting or considering an applicant's criminal history pursuant to Sections 361.021 or other applicable laws. And that is the amendment. And I would like for us to adopt this amendment.
Is there any discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Champion.
And I will stand for questions. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hall moves to amend Senate File Number 523 as follows. Page 2, line 6, and this is the A7 amendment.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the author yield to a couple questions?
Senator Champion, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Champion, first off, my first question is, does this bill in any way affect sex offenders that might be looking for a job in a nursing home?
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator, a nursing home is one of those employers that could, first of all, a nursing home is a facility that cannot hire certain individuals because they would be disqualified under the law. And a nursing home can put on their application, their initial application, that certain people with certain backgrounds will be prohibited from having employment with them. So I will simply say that I'm sure that a person who's been charged with crim sex or something of that particular nature cannot have any interaction with the most vulnerable folks in our society.
Great.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. Let me start out by saying I think we all believe in redemption. I think I've known many that have been in prison, come out, and have changed their lives around either in prison or when they get out of prison. But I think we need to be concerned how this deals with the private sector. And so I have another question. Would the good senator yield?
Senator Champion will yield. Senator Hall.
Senator Champion, thank you. Does this include security companies? Would they also be under this?
Senator Champion.
Madam President, and to the great senator, if you look at Section 5, and again, if you look at the spirit of by which I am putting forth this particular legislation, there is nothing that will prohibit a security company from doing the same, because there are certain potential past infractions that would make it unlikely that a person with a certain past to be able to work for a securities company, and they would be able to put that on their initial application, and there's nothing in my legislation that would prohibit that from happening.
Senator Hall.
Point of information, Madam President. Am I able to turn around if I've asked him a question and look at him, or do I always stay forward?
different presidents have different interpretations. My interpretation is that when you are speaking, you should speak to me. When you are listening, you can look at him.
Okay. Thank you, Madam President. And I know there was some question the other day on the same order, so I might as well ask it now. What is turning? How far is turning? If I go like this, am I turning? I'm really serious because I don't want to break the rules. My feet are square. Can I do this? Or not? I know it's kind of fun, but I'd rather not be called on it.
My preference is when you are speaking, you would speak to me. When you are listening to the other speaker, you can turn or look at them.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Champion, if a company, and I'm just trying to get this in my perspective, if a company is wants to bring three people in for an interview, and so they select all the interviewers, but there's no box, and they don't really want to have somebody that was a felon, which is their right to do, and all three of those come in for an interview, and all three of those end up being a felon, and they don't want to take those, would you say that that is a waste of their time?
Senator Champion.
Madam President, and to the Senator, I do not believe that that would be a waste of their time. I think the richness of my particular bill provides a platform and an opportunity for employers to see and look at and consider the skills and qualifications of every potential employee. And I think that benefits a company when they can have a pool of talented and skilled individuals to consider. I would also like to say that it also provides an opportunity for someone who may have made a bad decision in their past, but since that time, it could have been even 10 years ago or 7 years ago, but since that time, may have done plenty of things to rehabilitate their life and to do something great, and I would prefer, and this bill allows for them to be considered on their merits and to also have an opportunity, Senator, for them to be able to talk to their employer about what happened at that time and how their lives are different and how they might also benefit the company. And the last thing that I'll say before I turn it back over to Senator, is that let's take for an example, a member of the Second Chance Coalition is also the Minnesota Teen Challenge. And if you think about chemical dependency, sometimes individuals make bad choices because of their dependence on alcohol or some other substance. And they sometimes make bad decisions, but then once they are clean and they've shown some sobriety for quite some time and they've gone back to school, I would prefer for that person to be able to go and fill out an application and not have to be bothered with this particular question. But later they can say, as to their past infraction, what they did wrong and how they've changed since that particular time and how they might benefit this company.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Senator Champion. That is interesting that you wanted, I assume, the support, and even brought up the support of Midwest Chaplain Teen Challenge, and yet I would assume, I didn't actually look, that you probably voted against them being a good organization yesterday. I find that a little bit ironic. But let me ask my next question. If they come out of prison the day before, are you still saying the employer shouldn't know until the interview? Or even if they've committed a hate crime or they're a terrorist, they come out the next day, is that still okay in your understanding?
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Hall, let me say this. I think that a person who has a past, that information should be provided at a certain time. And under my bill, if the person shows the qualifications and skills and will be subject to an interview, and they are able to, before the interview, do a background check and inquire as to a person's background. And that information, I would hope, would show up, and that employer has the ability to make a decision as it pertains to what they want to do about that particular person. There's nothing that says that an employer is bound to hire anyone that they don't quite feel comfortable with. But what this does is, it creates a platform so that an individual that has been rehabilitated and they can demonstrate rehabilitation and they can demonstrate skills and qualifications that will benefit a company to have that opportunity to do that.
Senator Hall, on the A7 amendment now.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Champion. Under what you just said, that they can show that they have been rehabilitated, I think there needs to be some time. And so all this amendment does is puts it that it's out a 10-year period. After they've been out for 10 years, then they wouldn't have to select that box and would have to be done at an interview if they wanted to ask that question.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. I would encourage the body to oppose this amendment. There's no timeline that is available even for an employer if they're going to begin to look at this information or any records and be able to make that immediate determination or even to determine if it's accurate or not. And so for the clarity of this bill and the clarity that has been provided by the partners that have come together in order to put together this language for this bill, I would oppose this amendment.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Champion. I would suggest, first off, a roll call on this.
Roll call's been requested. Roll call granted.
And again, I really appreciate the heart of this, and I think in general it's good. I do see it putting a little bit more of a burden because time is money when you talk about businesses. And I do know a lot of people that this would help. And right, out of teen challenge even. But I want some time for someone to, made a mistake at 17 years old. Okay, in 10 years, from 17, they get out of jail. I don't even think they've grown up. I tell my own kids, you lose your brains at 14, and about 21, you gain them back again. And so I think it's a good time period of 10 years for someone to show that they're being a responsible citizen and they haven't had any dealings with the law prior to or after that. So I would hope for a green vote on this.
Any more discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing no discussion, the Secretary will take the roll on the A7 amendment. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 20 in favor and 41 opposed, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Thompson.
Madam President and members, thank you. I'd like to offer the A8 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Madam President, thank you. I'd like to thank Senator Champion for working together on this. Pardon me.
Senator Thompson moves to amend Senate File Number 523 as follows. Page 3 after line 4, insert, and that's the A8 amendment.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you. Pardon me, Madam President. Again, I'd like to thank Senator Champion for working on this. And in fairness, we just got this amendment drafted a little bit ago, and would Senator Champion yield?
Senator Champion will yield. Senator Thompson.
Thank you. Senator Champion, I promised you adequate time to get a look at this amendment, and I got it to you as quickly as it was drafted. Are you prepared to speak to this, Senator Champion, or do you need a little more time? If so, I'll withdraw the amendment and allow you to get a look at it.
Senator Champion.
Madam President and Senator Thompson, I've had enough time to consider this amendment. Thank you so much for getting it over to me expeditiously.
Senator Thompson.
All right, Madam President, it is the intent of the author, as I understand it, not to allow this particular bill to provide for any civil law remedies. In other words, a violation of this legislation, should it be passed and signed into law, should not result in individuals being able to bring lawsuits or any kind of claims against businesses. We are not, of course, attempting to change any other employment law within the state, but simply restrict this statute so that the only penalties available are those provided for relative to the Department of Human Rights. So I believe if this amendment has been drafted satisfactorily for Senator Champion, I believe it is a friendly amendment, but of course I will allow him to speak to that. I believe what this should do, Madam President, is give businesses comfort that this is not opening up any new avenues for lawsuits. It is simply accomplishing the intent of the author, and I would respectfully request that the members vote yes.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. That is correct. I did have some conversation with Senator Thompson and other senators in this body in order to talk about our intent, and our intent is only to make sure that individuals are able to be judged on their skills and qualifications, and we are not trying to create new individual opportunities for folks to go into court, and the penalties articulated in the bill are appropriate, and I will accept this amendment.
Any more discussion on the A8? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. Also, thank you, Senator Champion, for allowing us to do that, and allowing Senator Champion to Senator Thompson to bring the amendment forward. It's a, as you've pointed out, I support this bill, I support the amendment. As you've pointed out, and second chance, redemption, and the practical matter here too is that one of the best ways to reintegrate people who have had trouble with the law and convictions into society is to get a job. So I support the legislation. Thank you for taking the amendment. It's important to the state as well as to the private employers. Thank you.
Any more discussion on the A8 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Any more discussion? Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, would Senator Champion yield just for
Senator
a question?
Champion will yield. Senator Senchum.
Thank you again, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Champion. I wonder if we could just go to Section 3 of the bill. I just want to make sure of something. And it relates to Section 3B, starting on line 2-10 to 2-13, where it suggests, at least in my mind, that if an employer has a statutory duty to do a criminal history background check, and some of this might be a nursing home, adult foster care, a hospital, on and on, and there's many, many categories of these. In those situations, if the employer wants to retain using the box, so to speak, is that not permissible with that exemption, as noted in Section B or Subsection B of Section 3?
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Sinjum. As you see in Section 3B, The only thing that changes on line 2.10 is scratching public, because there's already that particular provision that's in law. But to give you comfort, there's nothing in the bill, if you look on page 4 and starting at line 4.1 to 4.3, there's nothing that doesn't allow for an employer in the position that you just talked about to say, as opposed to ask specifically of the applicant, but to post and say, if you've been, you know, convicted of, you know, these particular crimes, you will be prohibited from employment with us, right? So they can still do that under this bill. And if you look at the line 4.1, it just clearly says this chapter does not supersede a requirement under law, because a lot of those groups that you've talked about or organizations under law to conduct a criminal history background investigation or consider criminal history records in hiring for particular types of employment. So the particular types could be nursing homes, daycares, corrections, any of those that already said no, that they cannot hire people with certain criminal background histories. They can articulate that on their application without specifically asking the question.
Senator Sensham.
Madam President and Senator Champion, if, for instance, though, let's just take an example, in a nursing home, had a position open, and their standard approach to things was to having a box, if you will, a checkoff box, have you ever been convicted of a felony? If that's the way their application looks today, can they not, on Section B here of, subsection B of Section 3, can they not continue to use that application just as a screening tool? In other words, they might have, 20 applications, and they know they can't hire a felon to start with. If there's a self-admission, cannot they continue to use that box as a screening tool?
Madam Champion.
And Senator Sinjum, under that limited exception, yes, they can.
Okay.
Because there is that requirement.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Champion.
Senator Sinjum. Is there any more discussion? Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I'm wondering if the author of the bill would yield.
Senator Champion will yield. He will yield. Senator Ortman.
Here we go. Maybe I should get out my mirror so I could look at Senator Champion. My question is this. If I am an employer in the state of Minnesota, say I have a private insurance company or a law firm or a restaurant or a bar, I could decide to hire a felon today without this change at all. Is that correct, Senator Champion?
Senator Champion.
My understanding is that's yes.
And
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, if, without looking back,
Senator Ortman, you can look back when he speaks.
Can Senator Champion
talk to
yield?
Me when you're talking?
I am. Okay. I took a pause. I looked. Now I'm back. Madam President, to Senator Champion, would he yield yet again?
Senator Champion will yield. Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Madam President and Senator Champion, is there any reason why a private employer in Minnesota now, under those same circumstances, maybe it's an insurance company, a law firm, a restaurant, or a bar, that they couldn't also decide that they did not want to hire a felon? There's nothing in this law that would change that either, is there?
Senator Champion.
Madam President and Senator Ortman, no.
Then, Madam
Senator
President,
Ortman.
My great concern about this bill is it really doesn't accomplish anything except to put brand new regulations on Minnesota businesses and create a whole new government program to check up on Minnesota businesses. I am as big an advocate as anyone for second chance and especially expungement, but I just don't think this legislation is anything but feel-good legislation. I can understand why people want to vote for it, because we're trying to send a message. I'm just not one for passing legislation to send a message.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Dibble. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Dibble, Senator Anderson was next.
Thank you, Madam President. Would the author yield?
Senator Champion will yield. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Champion, I thought it was my understanding that the Department of Labor and Industry had major jurisdiction over the employers or the employment that goes on in the state of Minnesota. Am I correct in that statement, or do I have something amiss in what I said?
Senator Champion.
It's my understanding they are one body, yes.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Speaker.
Madam President.
I get this right yet. Would the author yield again?
At least you said madam.
Madam
Senator
President,
Anderson.
Senator Champion, to me, this language here should be, in my viewpoint, should be given to the Department of Labor and Industry rather than putting into another department to have jurisdiction over. It seems to me we're expanding and growing the bureaucracy, and I just can't see why we would have to put it into this agency and not have it into a Department of Labor and Industry. And if you could explain why we're duplicating this, being redundant in this area, I'd appreciate that.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator. In our discussions when we were looking at how do we make sure that there's no individual cause of action, and we wanted to create an opportunity for any penalties that may, which is discretionary, be imposed upon an employer, that it should go through an agency that is equipped to handle it and equipped to deal with it. And when there are usually issues around compliance with employment, that also goes through the Department of Human Rights as well if there's some challenge. And so that was a reason why we chose the Department of Human Rights, and that this in no ways takes anything away from the Department of Labor and Industry, and there's no duplication of services because this is not something that labor and industry will deal with. This is right within the wheelhouse of the Department of Human Rights.
Madam President.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. So, Senator Champion, this is a redundant piece of legislation that the Department of Labor and Industry could easily do without having to have another piece of legislation put in place.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Dipple.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to respond to the perspective that this is feel-good legislation that accomplishes nothing. That's actually not the case. The fact that there is a box checkoff causes some employers to simply throw away applications, whether they're submitted by paper or electronically, without even taking a look at the application or the resume that someone presents, much less letting someone get their foot in the door and present themselves personally, present their credentials, and present themselves as a viable and possible candidate for employment. Madam President, members, we all know folks who have made a mistake in the past, and it shows up on their record. We also know that we've been in a circumstance in which the economy has been very, very difficult. I personally have, and finding a job has been tough for a lot of folks, and folks who are arbitrarily excluded have found it even more difficult. I have a friend, a very good friend, who made a mistake a few years ago, has to check that box, and has submitted literally hundreds and hundreds of resumes and applications and gotten not a single interview. He's frustrated. Hundreds of people are frustrated. I know him professionally. I also know him personally, know that he would be an outstanding employee in his field, but hasn't been able to get a toe in the door, especially because a lot of the way a lot of these are handled is in an automated format. So it doesn't accomplish nothing. Employers can still make their decisions, absolutely. We hope that employers are become enlightened as a result and can consider folks and their ability to reform and redeem themselves and allow folks once again to enter the productive economy in our society. So a long way still has to go. But this is a first step. It's not a do-nothing bill. It'll make a significant difference in people's lives.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. to Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble is actually 100% correct in his assertion that the bill is not a feel-good piece of legislation. It does accomplish something tangible, something very real, and I would say even the goal of the legislation is on the right track. I would say the manner in which it accomplishes it is not. I think if members were to actually speak to me about my opinion on expungement and criminal records, you'd probably find that I'm somewhat of a radical, actually. I think that the public availability of criminal records for a person's lifetime is really an injustice, in the sense that it's almost a set of ongoing fines and penalties that the person pays long after their sentence is served. And so my problem with the bill is not that our criminal justice system doesn't need a remedy. It does. But the remedy is to look at the way that we make available criminal records in the first place. The criminal justice system is the appropriate role of government. So the remedy to this situation is to look at our expungement process and, I think, move aggressively in freeing up people to go about their lives in a productive manner. The remedy is not to go outside the bounds of the appropriate role of government and intervene in interactions between private parties in the marketplace. That's not the appropriate role of government. So what I would advocate for and hope that this body takes up the issues of expungement, statute of limitations on criminal records, that is the appropriate conversation. And I believe that is the remedy to this situation. If we could limit the availability and that ongoing punishment in the availability of criminal records, that would address this issue as well, not by intervening in free associations in the marketplace.
Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. Will the author yield, please?
Senator Champion, you yield. Senator Osmak.
I apologize if I might ask a question that may have been answered. I was out of the room. Is there anything in current statute that requires employers to actually have the box on their application forms at this time?
Senator Champion.
Madam President, my understanding is no.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator
will
Osmak.
The author yield for another question?
The author will yield. Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. Do you have any financial information regarding how much it's going to fiscally cost private employers to update all of their forms, update their websites, their application websites, and update the reporting systems that go to the individuals who are hiring individuals, all of the software involved in that? Do you have any financial information on the impact of private sector businesses that are going to be doing this?
Senator Champion.
Madam President, Senator, no. And in fact, we have had this discussion with a number of employers who say that they could make some changes without there being any real cost because a lot of them are online. And so with that, to your specific question, the answer is no.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President. And I think as I listen to this conversation and I start to think about the people who this affects, I think we've all touched on it a little bit, and we touched on once someone has made a mistake in their life or made a poor choice and how long should they continue to pay for it. I think Senator Peterson was quite eloquent in his articulation of what happens in this lifetime of penalties. And I think that we're going to continue to get there. I'm reminded of a story that I was told by my own father, who in 1972, he had a series in the 60s and all the way up into the 70s, had a series of issues related to his drug and alcohol use. And finally, on that last time when he ran into a car in front of the police station and went to sleep and the police found him, he decided to get his life together, and he decided to go to treatment. And he went to treatment twice, one after the other, just to ensure that he could get it. And he got some of those. He had the ability to either go to treatment or go to jail. And he went to treatment. After that, he got his life together. I was only about 6 years old, and then about 3 years later, he opened up a chemical dependency treatment center, specifically working in communities of color, but not exclusively, because he knew that was an issue. And so, he has celebrated his 40th year of sobriety just this past year and has had his treatment center and has helped tens of thousands of people to get their lives back on track. But the reason why I got up is a couple of years ago he came over and to the legislature and was testifying on behalf of some chemical dependency issues and the licensing issues that we have in DHS, where sometimes we don't let people who have experienced these issues back into the field to help those to get it. And he said something compelling, and I remember thinking about it. He said that if the laws were on the books then that they are today, he would have never been able to get his life on track. He would have never been able to help those tens of thousands of people. And so, members, I know that we are always concerned about public safety. We want to make sure that we're not putting people in harm's way. But I think that this bill is kind of on the right road to allowing people to have some redemption, to allow people like my father, Dr. Peter Hayden, to help save people's lives, to allow people to have an opportunity to redeem themselves in society. And so this isn't the panacea. This is the first start. And I was kind of joking with the lobbyists and Senator Champion, making sure that this bill didn't get too watered down with people's concerns. But I do think that members need to remember that there are people who often make mistakes because of various reasons. In my father's case, it was his addiction to drugs and alcohol. But those folks can find redemption, and they can be, and I'm proud to say, be people like my father who has, I think, given back to society over and over again.
Senator Gazaka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Champion yield?
Will Senator Champion yield? He will yield. Senator Gazaka.
Senator Champion, first of all, I want to thank you for trying to look at something that would deal with giving people a second chance. When they deserve that, I certainly want them to have it. And in fact, on this issue, I've already talked to you a little bit about it. I'm struggling on which way to go on this for a variety of reasons. But one thing I did want to know, did you explore at all looking at the expungement process itself for felons? I mean, I don't think we have anything where we really have an opportunity to give those that have a felony a second chance through that process. And I just want to know if you explored that direction, because it would seem to me that would have been the better route.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator, for the question. I think it's a very appropriate question, and the answer to your question is yes. And in fact, even before coming over into the Senate, when I was in the other body, which I won't name, I worked hard on expungements, and in fact, worked a lot with Senator Latz. Unfortunately, I don't see him on the floor, but he's been someone who's worked a lot on these issues, along with a number of others, because I do think that to deal with this issue is comprehensive, and it's not just one silver bullet, for lack of a better word, or a panacea, like one thing. It's going to take a number of different things, and this is a step in that direction. And specifically to your question about expungements, yes, because I do think that that is an important notion that we need to deal with in real time, and Brandon Peterson is someone that I want to continue to work with on that issue as well.
Are there any other amendments? The Secretary will give Senate File 523 its third reading.
Senate File Number 523, a bill for an act relating to employment, limiting reliance on criminal history for employment purposes.
Is there any more discussion? The Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 43 yeas, 44. It's okay. All right, there being 44 ayes and 16 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We revert now to Senate File 1307, Senator Herr.
Madam President, I'd like to take my Senate File 1307 off the table.
Senator Herr moves to take 1307 off the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President, and I would like to withdraw my oral amendment.
The amendment's been withdrawn.
And then, Madam President, I would like to move Amendment A53.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves to amend Senate File Number 1307 as follows. Page 2, line 22, insert. This is the A53 amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate very much working with Senator Herr and also Senator Latz and Dibble and the Revisor's Office on getting the proper language to take care of this matter. And so the effect of this is to continue the repealer, but to take language from the repealer and put it into statute. And so that is what we have here in front of you. It preserves current procedure, current rule, but just moves it into the statute. And I ask for your green vote. Thank you.
Senator Herr.
Madam President, I really appreciate Senator Kiffmeyer for go beyond the oral amendment and create this new amendment, and I will accept that as a friendly amendment.
Is there any other discussion on the A53 amendment? All those in favor, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to add my voice of thanks. Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer, for paying attention, having a sharp eye, and our ability to do a little quick problem solving and troubleshooting on the floor. This is a good amendment.
All those, any other discussion on the A53? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion on Senate File 1307? The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1307, a bill for an act relating to human rights, changing provisions for certain certificates of compliance.
The Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1307. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 57 in favor and 3 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I'd like to move a brief recess for the purpose of appointing a conference committee.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate is in recess. The Senate will come to order. Senator Bach.
Madam President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate file number 671. Senators Latz, Dibble, Goodwin, Dietzick, and Limmer. Senator Bach moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We revert back to the fifth order of business. Reports of committees. Senator Bach. Oh, the Secretary will read the report.
Senator Skoy from the Committee on Taxes, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 1034, a bill for an act relating to state government, establishing the Health and Human Services budget, modifying provisions related to health care, continuing care, nursing facility admission, children and family services, human service services licensing, etc. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 1173, a bill for an act relating to transportation, defining project for Metropolitan Area Regional Rail Authorities contributions, etc., reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports read by the Secretary be adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. Senate file 1034 will be given its second reading. Thirteenth order of business, announcements of Senate interests. Are there any announcements? Without objection, the following people will be excused. Senator Miller, Weber, Lori, Reinert, Brown all day. Senator Rosen from 11:10 until the end of session. Senator Schmidt from 11:05 to 11:15. Senator Latz at 12 noon until the end of session. Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, just a brief synopsis of what we expect to happen next week. The remaining omnibus bills are House files, and we have to wait for those to come over from the House. So Monday and Tuesday, we expect to take up members' bills, special orders on the floor. We're hopeful that the House can get over the balance of the omnibus bills so that they can be concluded next week. I hope to be able to do that without a Saturday session, but at this point, it's a possibility.
Motion. Any other discussion? Any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, April 22 at 12 o'clock noon.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.